Welcome to A Quiet Life. I'm your host, Ruth Amos. 1 Thessalonians 4 says, make it your ambition to lead a quiet life. In this podcast, I chat to all sorts of normal Christians, asking them just how they live their quiet lives and how they integrate their faith into their daily lives. I hope that by listening, you will be encouraged to go out and live your own quiet life to the glory of God. You can find the episode show notes, the Quiet Life blog, and other resources at ruthamos.com.au. That's ruthamos.com.au. Now let's get on with the show. Hello, I'm Ruth. It's great to be here with you on A Quiet Life. This is episode 59, and as I record this, it is Wednesday the 25th of March, and our lives have pretty much been turned upside down. This morning on my walk, I was listening to the Bible, listened to Daily Audio Bible with Brian, and he was reading the Sermon on the Mount from Luke 6. And he talked about afterwards about how what Jesus says there turns our lives upside down. Blessed are the poor, you know, blessed are those who weep, blessed are you when you're persecuted. It's just a complete upside down to how we normally look at life. I was already listening to it and thinking, yeah, you know, God's rules are sort of upside down from our rules. And I even think I never want to wish suffering on anyone, but as we go through this time, we can really use the suffering that we're feeling at the moment, the fear and the hardship and the struggle, to bring us closer to God. And for me, what's happened for me is I've realized that some things where I thought I was really trusting God, I was not. I was actually trusting my own money or my own ability to bring in money or the health that we have. I was, you know, trusting that we're all young and healthy and we're going to be well. And these things have just been, oh, and my relationships with people, like trusting the fact that I can go and see people and fellowship with them to build me up and to make me feel like I am a Christian. And it's been good to have this time of that all being turned upside down so that I can say, oh, actually, no, God, I really want to trust you. So I don't know whether you're having the same experience of thinking that you were trusting God and then now that things have gone a bit pear-shaped, thinking, oh, was I really? And the wonderful thing about our God is he's just so faithful. And as we turn back to him and repent and say, I'm sorry, I thought I was trusting you, but turns out wasn't, but I'd like to do that now, please. He's just so happy to forgive us, you know, because of what Jesus has done for us. And he is a firm foundation and he will draw close to us and we can trust him. And even when everything else has just turned to mush around us, we can stand on the firm foundation that is God. He knows what he's doing. He does. He knows what he's doing. And he will look after us. Maybe we'll get sick. Maybe we'll lose money. Maybe we'll lose our houses. Who knows how far this is going to go. But God will always be there for us. And he will work everything together for our good, the good of our souls. And I think we need to use this time to get in touch with that truth because it's just such a fantastic truth. And look, if you look at Christians through the ages, they've had to come to terms with that truth as well. And it's just great that we have the same God as they had during the plague and during the great persecutions and we can trust him. We can trust him. He is trustworthy. So please feel free to chat to me about any of that rather long rant. I feel deeply about it. I feel deeply. I love God. And he loves me. It's wonderful, isn't it? Yeah. So you can find me on Facebook at Ruth Amos Author or on Twitter at A Quiet Life, or you can email me at ruth@ruthamos.com.au. As I went to post the podcast last week, my website was down and I went to upload it and it said 404 not found and I just freaked out. What's going on? Wasn't this supposed to be the important fellowship podcast? Anyway, the Lord knows what he's doing. I couldn't put it up on Wednesday, but I could put it up on Thursday. So nobody knows what went wrong. I went and talked to the help people and they didn't have a clue. So it came back. Praise God, it came back. And I posted on Facebook, my website's up. I probably should have said my website's backup, but I didn't. So I think I gave people the wrong idea. I think they thought it was a new website. It's not a new website. It's my same old website. But anyway, I'm very glad that it came back and people said that they liked my site. So that was really lovely. It was good to hear. And Eva said that she's really enjoying listening to the podcast. So I'm so glad, Eva. Keep enjoying it. And Thomas said this year is really becoming the year of saying no. Well, it is. It's the year of being said no to, isn't it? Miles keeps calling it the year that nothing happened. Yeah, who knew this was coming? But if you've got extra time on your plate, that's great. Use it to look over your life, maybe. Think about what you should be saying no to when the whole big machine starts up again. And I also want to thank everyone who posted me a photo. Now, this was on my personal wall, but it's a pretty public personal wall. And I said, I want to see photos. And there were so many photos. Photos of dogs and cats and toilet paper and grandchildren and rabbits and cross-stitch and memes. It was uplifting to talk to all of you and to see your photos. So thank you for posting photos on my wall. That was great. I also posted on Facebook the link to our church service online. So I enjoyed Sunday. It was a great online church time. And we watched the video from our church, which is St. Clement's. And I've put the link in the show notes if you want to see what our church has done. And then after we did that, and we had some worship time just as a family because we play instruments. So Moz and Caleb played piano and guitar, and then guitar and piano. And I played the bass. And we sang, and that was really lovely too. So I really enjoyed that. I'm really loving the fact that so many churches are doing this great online thing where you can actually feel like you're part of the community, even though we're all in our little homes at home alone. But yeah, it's important. It's important for us to look out for the people around us. I was listening to the daily briefing from the Premier before I came on here, and he was talking about how it's good for us to look out for the elderly and whatever and bring them groceries and things like that. So I encourage you to keep doing that. And I encourage you to keep being part of fellowship online however you can get it. Caleb's games night that he normally goes to on a Tuesday night did it online last night, so that was fun too. He came downstairs here and we could hear him going, "Oh, no!" and whatever as the games happened. And we just enjoyed it. And Jess, in case you're wondering about my whole family, Jess is doing fine. She's checking in with me every day at the moment too, so that's great. Today's interview, which I'm sure you'll be very happy to get to, is with Natasha Moore. Now, I was a bit fangirly, and I hope that doesn't come across too badly. Natasha works for the Centre for Public Christianity, or CPX, and she's one of the hosts of another podcast called Life and Faith. And Life and Faith is fantastic. I can't recommend it highly enough. It's a great podcast. I listen to it regularly. So the link to Life and Faith is also in the show notes today. So Natasha and I had an excellent talk. It was so great to talk with her, and I'm sure you'll enjoy it too. And I'll let you listen to it now. I'm very excited to do the interview today because our guest today is Natasha Moore from the Centre for Public Christianity, and she is one of the hosts of the Life and Faith podcast, which I listen to all the time. And if you don't listen, you really should, because it is absolutely excellent. And Natasha's done some very interesting interviews that I have enjoyed very muchly. And she came to Hobart earlier this year, and I went along to listen to her talk, and then I nabbed her afterwards and said, "Would you come on my little podcast?" And she said yes. So so you're very welcome, Natasha. Thanks for coming.
Thank you for having me.
So we'll start where we always start. How did you become a Christian?
So I always believed in God. I can't remember a time when I didn't. In some ways, I was quite a like solemn, pious child. Like I kind of, you know, I think I was a bit intense, and I was a big bookworm, and I'd, you know, read my Bible sometimes. And we were a sort of sometimes church-going family, on and off. But then kind of when I started high school, we weren't going to church anymore, and I became more interested in other things. I just wanted to be popular and liked and, you know, enjoy things. And then when I was in year nine, so I was 14, and we kind of made the decision as a family to start going along to this other church, which had a big youth group. You know, I had a friend at school who was part of the youth group. Her dad was the minister at this church, and that was kind of the place where I first looked around. You know, I joined a Bible study with a bunch of other, you know, 14-year-old girls, and I was a bit like, you know, I believe in God and they believe in God, but it kind of seems to make a difference to their life that they do, and I don't think that's true for me. So sort of figuring out what that difference was. And there was, in the middle of that year, I went on a church camp where the talks were basically, you know, two ways to live, the classic presentation of the gospel from creation onwards, and everything kind of clicked into place for me, and I was like, oh, well, if this is what this is, then it's kind of all or nothing, and so I want to be all in. And I, you know, prayed one night. It was the 17th of July, 1998.
Wow.
And I gave my life to Jesus.
It's fantastic. You really, I mean, church camps are amazing, aren't they? They're really important. Yeah.
Really cool. Yeah.
And it's so awesome that you know the actual date.
We have an anniversary, me and Jesus.
So cool. And so was there a time later on in your adult life where you felt like you had to recommit or make that decision more solid, I guess?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, you're kind of growing and changing all the time. There's no such thing as a static faith. You're kind of either like a few steps backwards or forwards. And I mean, the time that I think of particularly, I was living in the UK, and I kind of got to a point where I'd been a Christian for, I guess, about 10 years. And I was like, I believe this to be true. And I also believe these things I say, like, oh, being a Christian is not about kind of living in a particular way. It's about a relationship with Jesus. And I believed things like, oh, you know, God is the most satisfying thing in the world. Like he's where we get our joy. I believed these things intellectually, but I was like, I'm not really feeling that. I don't know how much I experience that relationship if I'm honest with myself. And so I kind of went through this time of like, well, you know, I have strong desires for stuff. And like, if my experience doesn't match that sense of God is the one who will satisfy my desires, like most fundamentally, then this is not going to stick, you know, for the long haul. And so going through a period of like, okay, well, what does it mean to really have a personal love for Jesus and for that relationship to be a real experiential, you know, reality in my life? So that was kind of a really formative period for me as well.
So how do you go from that head knowledge to heart knowledge? Did you just like study the Bible more, or was it a church thing, or
no, it wasn't. I mean, it is kind of a press. The thing with me is I really like books. Books are really central to my life in lots of ways, and my solution to almost anything is, oh, surely there's a book I can read that will kind of fix this for me, right? And like, there generally is. Like, that's not the whole answer, but so I kind of, one of the things is that I started reading about spiritual disciplines. So this was just not a feature, you know, I became a Christian in a kind of conservative evangelical church. It was really strong on kind of like getting the Bible right and on head knowledge. And, you know, that was really helpful and formative, but there was kind of a sense of like, oh, if you read your Bible and you pray for a bit every morning and you go to church, then that's like, Those are the things Christians do, and that's the sum total of kind of, you know, your experience of God. And you know, digging into writings about spiritual disciplines made me go, actually, there's this whole array of practices and habits that Christians have had, you know, throughout the ages that I've just never heard about and have, you know, not been using. So there was kind of like incorporating. And, you know, that's sort of the appropriate word because they're sort of bodily practices, you know, even in prayer, like physical practices in prayer and, you know, fasting and stuff like that. There was also this book I read, which someone gave to me. It was called Stepping Heavenward, and it's actually a 19th century novel. It's written as this girl's diary from when she's 16 until like in her 40s. And I loved it. I've read it like many, many times. I've given it to many, many, many people. It's sadly out of print, but you can get an ebook or whatever. But
I'll find links, put them in the show notes.
It taught me to love Jesus. Like I kind of, it just really illuminated for me. This is what it looks like to live just an ordinary everyday life. And to do that with just a profound like joy in personal knowledge of Christ. And so, yeah, I think just at the end of the day, like whatever that looks like in terms of reading books or doing certain practices, like it's a seeking, right? I was seeking God and he rewards that.
Yeah. It says that in scripture, he rewards those who earnestly seek him.
There you go. You've got that from somewhere.
Cool. And you're a history buff, right? Is history your thing? Have I got that right?
Literature is my background, but, you know, history involved in that.
Yeah, absolutely. So what does working for CPX involve for you?
So my title is Research Fellow. So research is one of the things that I do, but really I do the things we do, which is I kind of spend my time reading and thinking about things I'm interested in and then speaking and writing about things I'm interested in, which is totally amazing. So we're a media company. We want to be a Christian voice in the public square that is generous and rigorous and, you know, really kind of reaching across lines of difference and being like, hey, actually Christianity has something to say to all of life and something to contribute to the public conversation that, you know, we're like that conversation is worse off if Christians aren't saying things in it because Christian faith does conduce to human flourishing. And so, you know, everybody misses out if we're not saying gracious, true things in the public square. Not everyone agrees with that, of course, but that's what we think. And so we want to be that. And so we do things like write articles for the media about stuff that's going on in the news or in our culture. We have a weekly podcast, Life and Faith. I do speaking around the places, like when I came to Hobart, I met you. We make documentaries and write books and all that kind of thing.
Yes, fantastic. It's really good. How did you come to work for CPX?
Yeah, it's a really good question. So I went and did a PhD in English literature because I love books. And I then was like, okay, well, I love doing this, so I'm planning to be an academic. As it turns out, there are no jobs. So, you know, I was applying for academic jobs all around the world and, you know, it's a bit of a process. It's a whole kind of market. It's very brutal. But I was like, no, I'm doing that. And then so I was back home in Sydney for a bit and this job came up as a maternity cover for a year for my colleague Justine Toe. And I was like, oh, well, I won't get it because I don't have any media experience, but it'd be a really cool job. And, you know, I do want to be an academic, but it'd be good to get some media experience that would help with that, help me to do that well. And so I applied and I got it. And then it turned out to be the best job in the world. And so when they asked me to stay, I was like, yeah, I think I'll do that. Let's do that.
And Justine Toe is still there as well, which is great.
She came back and I stayed and we worked together. That's great.
Yeah, that's absolutely fantastic. What have been some of your favourite interviews?
Oh, that's a huge question. We talked to so many amazing people. It's one of my favourite things about this job and there are a lot of really great things about this job. So even just like if I gave you three recent ones, like – last week, and this one hasn't come out yet, but will early next year, we spoke to a guy whose real name I can't tell you because he works undercover. We called him Investigator V. He works for International Justice Mission, and he works undercover, you know, rescuing girls from sex trafficking and, you know, boys from slavery on fishing boats and, you know, like just this amazing work. You know, he was kind of in the Marines and worked as a cop for a long time and for the FBI for a bit. And now that he's retired, he's doing this incredibly kind of dangerous, important work in, you know, Africa and Asia, and like just really lovely, humble, trauma absorbing, loves God man. That was like a really amazing conversation. I got to recently, one of my favorite interviews that we did recently, I wanted all you to do an episode about murder mysteries, about why our culture is so obsessed with crime. I got to talk to this cold case detective.
He was fantastic.
It was so much fun. I loved it. And there was so much I had to cut out of that conversation as well to fit the podcast. But, and, you know, he was 35 and he was a detective and an atheist, and he started reading the Gospels and looking at them from the perspective of a detective and being like, okay, well, this is a cold case. I know how to investigate a cold case, and applied those skills and ended up becoming a Christian.
Yeah.
I think the other one might be, there was a woman called Valerie Browning. I don't know if you remember, if you listened to this one. So she is Australian, and she's for 30 years been living among the Afar people in Ethiopia. And she was formidable, like this very, like, you know, diminutive woman, full of energy, like fierce. She married a tribesman. She lives among these people. She owns nothing. She has nearly died of like snake bite and childbirth and in a civil war, and very critical of kind of our Western affluent Christianity, what the church here is like, what, you know, people in this society are like. And she was just very like, there was one point where I was like, you know, are you not ever afraid? And she was like, oh no, I put a stop to that a long time ago. You know, fear is a useless thing. And I was like, okay. It's a bit confronting, right? You talk to these people living these lives, and yeah, it does kind of put things into perspective for you a little bit.
That story of her in childbirth with, you know, what did she say? My uterus was clamping down. She was just there. She was just like, I'm going to die.
But she nearly died, and yeah, and very like, there's no question of, because, you know, I kind of go, were you never tempted to play the Western card, to be like, hey, I could airlift out of here and go home to Australia and get, you know, this kind of medical care? And she's like, absolutely not. You know, I don't deserve anything more than they deserve, and I've chosen to live my life like them, and I'm not, you know, opting out. And, you know, when it's your time to die, then it's your time. And, yeah, she was a remarkable person. So I get to meet some, yeah, just incredible people, get such a window on, you know, work that's going on all around the world in all different spheres. And to see people, you know, being so themselves, like using their gifts, that whole Frederick Buechner quote, you know, about vocation, about the place God calls you to is the place where your deep gladness and the world's deep hunger meet. But you see that people's gladness, like their kind of loves and gifts and where the need is, and those things matching up, is this really breathtaking.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, and it feels like you're in the same sort of place in your work.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, I do feel incredibly blessed to be able to do the work that I do. But I kind of, yeah, I don't think of it in the same category as these people. Because I suppose this feels in some ways a bit parasitic, that I'm like, oh, well, we just tell the stories of all these other things. Like these, you know, for the last few years we worked on this documentary, and then I've just brought out the book, For the Love of God, How the Church is Better and Worse Than You Ever Imagined, which is all about, like, does religion poison everything, all these terrible things Christians have done, but also all these amazing things that Christians have done when they have been following Jesus. And, you know, looking at that, it's like, well, I'm no Florence Nightingale or William Wilberforce, but I get to spend my time kind of communicating to people what that looks like and, you know, what they went through. And so, yeah, my job is a lot easier.
It's a little bit less suffering involved. I know that feeling.
But it is, you know, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So I always ask people how their faith shows through their work, but it seems pretty obvious to me. You're almost in a missionary position.
Yeah, I never quite know how to characterize. People are kind of like, oh, you in your ministry. And I kind of go, oh, I'm not in ministry. Like, that's not really how I think of it. But it is a, you know, I spend my time trying to look at everything that's going on in our kind of culture and world through the lens of my faith, which all Christians try to do. Everyone's looking at the world through the lens of who they are. Mm-hmm. And then being like, okay, how can I communicate that to people who see the world differently in a way that really kind of invites them in and goes, oh, so that's how the world looks from the perspective of someone who follows Jesus, someone who believes in God, and to see how that's beautiful and compelling place to be. So, yeah, faith is pretty central to what we do here.
And you talk in high schools and things as well?
Yeah, I often get to speak in schools. Often I am one of the talks that I've given in a few places is about freedom of speech and disagreeing well, which is, you know, a big topic for our culture at the moment.
Huge.
That we're not great. We kind of think that saying, oh, I disagree with you means I hate you. Mm. And that makes it quite difficult to live in a pluralist society well. So, yeah, going around and being like, actually, here's why we need to give each other freedom to speak and to believe as we choose, and how we can do that well, and how actually the Christian faith offers some really great resources for doing that. So, yeah, that's one of the talks that I give to students. And, you know, because it's a really, like, it's their generation, and particularly kind of at the university level where a lot of these debates are at their kind of pointiest. Yes. So I really value the opportunity to speak to kind of, you know, 15, 16, 17 year olds about where this is headed and give them some tools to kind of navigate that.
Yeah, lovely. I have a question here I know I gave you before, so I'm going to give it to you even though it sounds a bit silly now. But if someone mm-hmm. wanted to do similar work to you, what path would you suggest they take?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I kind of think about, like, my job's a bit of a miracle, and I could never have planned to do this because it sort of doesn't exist. But I think the best advice I could give would just be to pursue what's on your heart to pursue and learn to do that well. And, you know, if you're a Christian, you can kind of trust God that he has plans for that. And those might not be straightforward, and they might not be exactly what you want or plan for, but, you know, he's pretty good at distributing resources, actually, and figuring out where to put his children. So, yeah, I think, like, going and doing a literature PhD wouldn't have been the thing you planned to do if you wanted to work for the Center for Public Christianity, but that's how it played out for me. So the answer is I don't know.
Yeah, fantastic. I thought that might be the answer, but I wanted to ask it anyway. When do you feel close to God?
You know, I think the answer to this has been changing for me. You know, I go through periods where I don't feel close to God at all. You know, that's not always like a central or constant element of my experience as a Christian. But I think I used to, mostly when I felt close to God, it was in a personal devotional setting, like in prayer, in reading my Bible, in, you know, kind of those spiritual practices. And that's not that that's not true anymore, but I think particularly over the last few years and in the church community that I'm in now, I think I've learned a lot more to like how communal the Christian life is. And that often, you know, I've had a few kind of dear Christian friends who have, you know, like their default is much more in the community, like the communal experience of God. And so we've kind of helped to bring out the opposite in each other. Often my personal experience of God and my feeling close to him has much more been in prayer and the word and in, you know, Sunday services with other Christians. That almost that's been in the space between us more than me locked in my metaphorical closet alone with God.
Yeah. I think that's something we can learn a lot from other cultures, is that, that more communal side of things. We're just so individualistic and it's not the whole of the story.
Yeah. No, not at all. Like we have, you know, we reflect God to one another. And if we're doing it on our own, then there's all these facets we're missing because he, you know, offers himself to each one of us, I think, slightly differently and wants us to reflect that all around so we get like a fuller picture. So, you know, really encountering him in other people and through them. Yeah.
That's a very nice picture. I like that. Not to mention all the character growth opportunities that you get in community that you don't get any other way.
Yeah, I don't want to idealize here.
So what's one thing about God or Christianity that you wish everybody knew?
I think I'd really like, both for people who are Christians and for people who very much aren't or are even like quite hostile to it, I'd really like for people to know that whatever else it is, it's not boring. That, you know, we have a way, Dorothy Sayers, the, you know, writer and detective novelist and so on, she has this great passage where she talks about how the Christian gospel is actually the greatest drama ever staged, and that it's amazing that we've actually managed in a lot of ways to kind of pare the claws of the Lion of Judah and, you know, tame him, like certify him meek and mild, and that that is not the Jesus of the Gospels. That if our picture of Christianity or our experience of it is of something smooth and respectable and comfortable, then we're missing most of what's actually going on there, because it's not smooth and it's not comfortable, and it's actually pretty radical and subversive. And if I've kind of slotted it nicely into my life, then yeah, there's something big there I'm not really paying attention to. So I think, you know, I don't want us to be offensive as Christians by being jerks or whatever. But actually, the gospel, if it's the scandal of grace that is offensive, like the gospel is surprising. And if people are like, oh, it's kind of boring and not worth paying attention to, then we're doing it wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Could not agree more. Is there anything else you'd like to share with us?
You know, I never really give a talk or, you know, almost write anything without quoting my favorite author, more or less my favorite these days. So I really feel like I should talk about her, or I haven't, you know, really been honest with you in this podcast, which is Marilyn Robinson. I don't know if you, do you know Marilyn Robinson?
No, I do not.
She's an American writer. She is a Christian, but she writes for, you know, a very secular audience. She wrote a series of novels, one called Gilead, which won the Pulitzer. And it's just this beautiful novel about this like pastor in the middle of nowhere in the 1950s. And he's this beautiful character, and just the picture of faith that presents, is so compelling and so, you know, not propaganda. It's just this kind of really honest picture of grace in a person's life. And then she's written all these wonderful essays as well. So actually I have a quote from her stuck on a post-it note up on my computer screen, because, you know, I work in media and so I spend a lot of time reading things about like Christians and Christianity in the media that can be a little frustrating. And she has a quote about how, you know, she reminds us that, like, basically about people being made in God's image, that everyone is deserving of respect. And she says, to value one another is our greatest safety, and to indulge in fear and contempt is our gravest error. To value one another is our greatest safety. To indulge in fear and contempt is our gravest error. And I just, like, that's a reminder I need all the time to be like, yeah, God loves every person, values every person so deeply. That's how we need to treat each other, which is such a good reminder, I think, in particularly our online kind of outrage culture, that that's what I want to do, treat everybody as worthy of respect and love.
Absolutely.
Read Marilyn Robinson.
All right. We shall put links again in the show notes, because, and okay. I need to, I'm just thinking, I'll put Gilead on my Christmas list. I think that's, because I had heard about it, but yeah.
So beautiful.
Yeah, lovely. Well, thank you so much for sharing with us today. It's been fantastic.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for the chat.
My pleasure. Well, I think that's an excellent quote for our time now that we didn't know about back when we recorded last year. Let's value one another and not indulge in fear and contempt. Yeah. May God bless you and help you to trust him more and more. And don't forget that you can chat to me on all the socials. Next week, we're going to have another chapter from My Year of Saying No, and it's about how we treat time like money. So I hope that you will tune in for that. Special thanks to Catherine Joy from Joy Music House for the music for this podcast. And yes, you can find me at ruthamos.com.au and sign up for my newsletter. And I will chat to you again next week.